You're listening to Reality Sandwich Radio, where every Thursday at noon we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, spirit, and our planet, community, and economy. To learn more about the Healthful Living model, go to healthfulliving.org. Reality Sandwich is hosted by Julie Matthews, Certified Nutrition Consultant, and Martin Matthews, Certified Medical Hypnotherapist. Past episodes of Reality Sandwich are available for free download at realitysandwichradio.com. Thanks for listening.
Always.
You're listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco, and welcome to Reality Sandwich, a palatable taste of the truth. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist and healthful living advocate with Healthful Living, and I'm here today with my co-host,
Julie Matthews, certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living as well.
And every week we discuss topics of the mind, body, our planet, really all the different areas of the Healthful Living model, and you can read about that at healthfulliving.org. Today we're going to be, I'm just so excited because we're going to be talking about some real bottom line subject matter in the areas of health of our body, health of our mind, and really trickling into so many of the other areas. We're here today with Carla Borelli. She is a local entrepreneur, background in marketing consulting, and really now getting into the health arena, but she's just launched a new website, new blog called localforage.com, localforage.com. And I've been tootling around there, just picking up some tips and recipes and just finding it to be a really delightful place for me to connect with other folks that have similar health interests to me. So welcome to the show, Carla.
Thank you, Martin. It's great to be here.
So tell me a little bit about just like you've just launched this recently and just what was some of your thinking going into it? What was some of your passion about whatever it was inside you that has now led to saying, all right, I'm launching this blog?
Well, let's see. First of all, eating is one of our most fundamental and most sensual acts. And eating what's good for you is not, eating what's good for you and eating what is, what tastes good, those two things are not mutually exclusive. So what I wanted to do was create a blog that could address both of those topics, health and gastronomy, because there are a lot of food blogs out there. There are hundreds of food blogs out there. And so this one's a little different in that there's a real focus on eating for health, but not at the expense of good taste.
Mm. What a unique concept.
Mm-hmm.
You mean eating for to actually nourish ourselves and also having, you know, enjoying it. Something's beeping here. You know, I agree. I've been on a lot of different sites, and there's all these ideas on food, but rarely am I seeing a good mixture of eating deliciously and having it be healthful, too. And
people assume foods that are healthy don't taste very good.
Right, because we learn that as kids, right?
Right.
Right? Everything that mom wants to give us that's healthy, we're always going, yeah! And we built up this sort of inner illusion that healthy food can't always taste great, and that's just simply not true.
Right. In fact, healthy foods, what I've found is that healthy foods taste better than non-healthy or even semi-healthy foods. Because what I'm trying to focus on the blog is really traditional foods. And there are some really important health reasons to focus on traditional foods, but also they taste amazingly good.
Absolutely.
You know, if you just take one category, which is, let's say, butter. And let's go another step further. Let's say raw butter. The taste of raw butter compared to commercial butter is, it's just not even in the same category. Mm-hmm. It's fabulous. Same thing with raw milk.
Let's clarify that for listeners. You just mentioned traditional foods.
Yes.
Right? Maybe everyone hasn't heard that phrase yet. So what do you mean by traditional foods?
Traditional foods are the foods that our grandparents and great-grandparents used to eat. So they were just much closer to the land then. They knew where their food came from, and that's the kind of stuff that I'm talking about, the really basic, wholesome, whole foods.
And then you mentioned butter as an example of that. What, I mean, if I go, like millions of people, to the store and buy regular butter today, what's the difference between, you know, my Land O'Lakes and what you're speaking of?
Oh, my gosh. Well, there's a Land O'Lakes compared to organic and then compared to raw butter. Those are three almost totally different categories. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Land O'Lakes is a commercial industrial brand of butter. Mm-hmm. So the cows that produced that milk that created the butter were raised under factory farming conditions. Mm. Okay. So, I mean, that's a whole other discussion. We could talk for, you know, half an hour just on that. Then there is organic butter, which is produced from organically, from organic cows, basically, and through organic protocol. So there are a lot of farms and dairies who are raising cows in a way that's sort of one step better than factory farms. But, for example, a lot of organic farms don't even allow their cows to be pasture grazed. Mm. Okay, that's a huge distinction. With a raw dairy farmer, those cows are absolutely pasture grazed. That's the only way to produce a healthy, clean, raw milk. So that's kind of like a Reader's Digest version. There are a lot of issues and a lot of food politics that come up in the discussion of those three things. But and actually, there's a really good article on the site called Frankenmilk that talks very specifically about dairy products. Mm.
And dairy products are just one area. Julie, you had a comment?
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, and so what Carl is talking about, that process of having the cow grazing on green grass and being healthy, you're going to produce a milk with better concentration of good fats, more nutrients, more flavorful, better taste. When you look at a commercial butter, they often have artificial, or not even artificial, but some sort of added coloring added back because the normal good vitamins and things that would be in the milk are deficient when you have a factory-raised cow that isn't very high quality. So you can taste the difference significantly because of the quality of the
right
product that's produced at the end.
And there's some really important ingredients for health that is in that kind of dairy. Mm-hmm. For example, CLA, and Julie, you're a nutritionist, so you know what CLA is, mm-hmm. conjugated linoleic
yep.
acid. Mm-hmm. And that is a cancer fighter. It's really important. And it is not found in very high quantities in pasteurized milk.
Mm-hmm. And DHA, too, which is one of the fatty acids for brain growth and brain development, is in much higher concentrations in a pastured animal. You're also going to have higher vitamin A and higher vitamin D, which are going to be helpful for the assimilation of the protein and the calcium. So there are a lot of distinctions. It's not just flavor. It is also right. the health of the milk that's produced, which makes sense. If you have a healthy animal, you're going to produce a healthy product. If you have an unhealthy animal, you're going to produce an inferior product that, of course, is not going to taste as good either.
Right. And this is exactly why I produce this blog, because most people have no idea about these issues, why this kind of milk is important, and why they should drink it, why they should use it, why they should pay more, in fact, for mm-hmm. this quality. Mm-hmm. So this is what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to expose these things and kind of illuminate these things because they're important for me, for my health, and they're important for the health of pretty much anybody.
Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we definitely get a sense that more people are waking up today to these issues because we're being bombarded in the media by confusing information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's an article recently in the Chronicle about the whole mercury in the fish issue, mm-hmm. right? I mean, we've got to wonder, gee, where are these coming from and who's promoting, you know, this kind of news media today? But more people, just like you and I, that are saying, hey, how do I be healthy given, you know, what's going on with respect to the increases of disease and all kinds of maladies in people's physical health, and go, you know, how can I use the information to serve myself? And
yeah, and that's important because I think you're right. A lot of consumers just are not getting the information that they need, because to really get the truth, the real information, you got to dig.
Right.
And let's face it, there's a lot of corporate control over the media. So I think this is why blogs and these kind of grassroots efforts of communicating are super important, because
right.
I do think that you can get more quickly to some truth on these matters.
And mm-hmm. connect with other real people.
Right.
You know, like you, with similar interests, that have done mm-hmm. something themselves. And, you know, that's a lot closer than just reading it from a blanket source.
Well, that's a good point, because in the article that was in the paper on the fish and mercury, it was very different than one of the experiences from one of your readers as to his personal experience with the mercury.
Yeah. A guy by the name of Mark Joseph, who's a friend of mine, also a nutritionist, he is someone who came down with some pretty heavy-duty mercury toxicity. Mm. And it came from eating fish, believe it or not. And he just, he kind of took a life-changing path after this illness. Mm. He switched his career. He went back to school, got a master's in nutrition.
Wow.
And now he sort of specializes in helping people to overcome their mercury toxicity. So anyway, he wrote an article for me on this topic that was sort of a response, like, what should you do or what should you really be concerned about in this Harvard study that came out last week.
Can you elaborate a little on the study for people who haven't seen it yet?
Well, the study basically said, you know, maybe mercury isn't so big of an issue. Don't reduce your intake of fish because the benefits outweigh the dangers. Mm. So he just took a look at that and brought in some other references. And, you know, the bottom line is he's saying use caution with this. You know, try to get fish that is in the categories that are, you know, less mercury heavy, and just, you know, you've got to use common sense, and you also have to think about why these studies are being published and sort of what might be behind the study. Mm. So it's just taking, you know, a critical look instead of just accepting information just because it's from Harvard with a blind eye.
I think that's what's difficult for the average person, because I know my clients will come to me all the time saying, well, I thought there were studies showing that coconut oil was bad. And how do we as non-scientists really know how to take apart these studies and figure out if they were done in a responsible or accurate manner to make the conclusions that people that they're making? And a lot of our myths and assumptions we have about nutrition are based on some of these faulty studies. And like you said, you have to look at the motivation behind why the people are doing the studies and really look into that, because studies are being paid for by industry.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make a study look like whatever you want it to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and the bottom line is, I mean, we have to come back to our own personal choice about how we feel on these matters. The more that we go through time and get so dependent on having all of our information and choices be guided by people outside of us. Oh, I heard this. Oh, I heard that. Oh, I heard that. Well, that's all great that you've heard those things, but what do you think and feel about what you want to eat to nourish your own particular body?
You know, Martin,
when you look at the ingredients list of some of these things, how do you feel about taking all that in?
Exactly. And, you know, how does your body feel? You know, when I drink raw milk, I feel great. Mm-hmm. And you have to pay attention to your own body, and every body is different. So milk may still be incompatible with, you know, other people. But for me, it feels great. So I agree. I mean, I'm a person of science, but I absolutely believe that you've got to use the intelligence of your own body to make some of these decisions.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's just talk briefly on that subject, because the raw milk topic always gets people under you know, fire. Because the moment you mention it, all of their pre-programmed responses come up. Oh, no. Oh, no. Can't do that. I've read here, read there. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Not safe. And it's not even able to open up their mind to, like, what's this? What are we really talking about here? And why are some people, you know? So what's the skinny on the raw milk? What would you just say to somebody who couldn't even, you know, just had that immediate response and go, no, no, no. But and then you wanted to give them a little bit of, like, all right, here's some truth.
Well, you know, the first thing I would say is that with any product that is produced, the quality of the production of the person creating it is really what you have to look at. And in the case of raw milk, just to explain a little bit about what Martin's talking about, there was a raw dairy farmer outside of Fresno who had his product recalled from shelves. And this is a dairy that has been tested over and over and very consistently. And there has never been a pathogen in his milk or in his cow's manure ever. He's just super diligent, and he's a super smart farmer. and he's producing a super high quality product. So what happened is a few kids got sick in Southern California. So as part of the process, at the county level, they were asked a bunch of questions. What have you been eating? What have you been exposed to? And so one of the things in common was raw milk. Now, I'll say that this was one of several things that were in common.
Mm-hmm.
So the response by the county and the state was to simply recall this milk from the shelves. And then they did the testing after. So what they found after, as is evidenced by the milk being back on the shelves now, is that there was nothing in the milk that caused those illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a lot of bias against products like this, I think mostly due to lack of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lack of understanding even at the state level as to how you can produce something that's super high quality. I mean,
yes.
The bottom line is that there are illnesses from pasteurized milk.
Mm-hmm.
There are illnesses from vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's
as
been
we
made
know.
Very clear, you know, the last month or so.
Right.
But things can happen with all categories of food. And so the issue here is, where do you go to find the highest quality product that you can?
I think that's a really good point, because when you think of milk and dairy farmers, 99% of all milk is raised in a conventional commercial way, and you, because the animals aren't very healthy, you can't produce a clean milk under those particular farming methods. So I think the mindset is that there are going to be pathogens and it's essential to pasteurize it, but we're seeing that quality is really the key here, and that you actually can
right.
make it.
Well, you start out with a better product. I mean, with
right.
Conventional milk, it absolutely has to be pasteurized
right.
because there's so much bacteria and pathogens in the milk. In fact, I think pasteurization leads to really sloppy dairy practices.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when you think about what you want to get, what do you want? A milk that's been produced sloppily, or something that has been produced with the utmost of care and diligence?
It's so interesting, because so many of us, the self-understanding people, go for this notion of quality. We'll buy quality, right?
Right.
We'll spend a little bit more for the quality product that we know is manufactured well, and it's going to last longer, and it's really made of good, solid components, right? Instead of just go buying the cheap one that is, you know, is made of junk, cost a little bit less, and we know we're going to be throwing it away for a while. But when it comes to the quality of our food, we don't apply the same distinction, because we don't quite think of ourselves in such high regard, unfortunately, I think.
I don't think that people understand that there's a huge difference
right.
in the quality from the cheap
no.
stuff to the expensive stuff. And I think they think they're doing a smart thing for their family to buy as inexpensively and get a good deal. I think they have no idea that there's more good fats, that there's more good vitamins, that it's a healthier product.
You're yeah. right. I mean, there are real economic issues, and there needs to be low price points
mm-hmm.
because, you know, we can't exclude we can't be completely elitist.
Mm-hmm.
Some people just can't afford raw milk, period. I mean,
it's pricey.
Allegedly $4.75 for a half for a quart. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's definitely there. It's an economic
if you have a family
choice
of four.
That you're making.
Yes.
Yeah.
But my whole thing is, well,
but there are
I
people who can't afford it. Okay?
Yes.
So
there's a lot of people, and there are a lot of people that can, and they just don't realize why they should spend the extra
yes.
money. I would rather have half the amount of cheese or half the amount of milk and get a superior quality, because you can't. Let's say you have regular milk or regular cheese. You cannot make up for the lack of vitamin A and the lack of fatty acids. You couldn't eat 10 times that much of the conventional stuff and get those nutrients. So it's better to eat just a small amount of the really good stuff, and you're going to get far more nutrients than if you eat all of the bulk of the other stuff. And I think that's one of the many reasons why there's weight issues in this country, because we don't have the eat nutrients, and so we're basically starving on some level. So we're eating and we're eating and we're eating these big cheesy and fatty meals, trying to get the nutrients that they just don't exist in there. So if people were to switch to something much more high quality, they could have less of it, and the price would probably end up being the same at the end.
Yes, and you know, there are also issues of convenience. For example, you know, you can't keep raw milk in the refrigerator for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now there's ultra pasteurized milk.
Right.
I mean, you can keep that in the refrigerator for an eternity. So, you know, there's an education process that has to happen, mm-hmm. which is that, you know, just because you can keep something in the refrigerator for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, that doesn't mean it's good.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yes.
And so issues of convenience are going to come up, and we have to rethink, you know, the way that we want to handle things like that and accept things like that.
So, Carla, before you began localforage.com, we were just talking before, you've had a long marketing background. How is it that you've become so focused on health?
Well, gosh, it's been a long journey, Martin. I think this whole path started about 10 to 15 years ago. I became very sick. You know, I was sort of in this crazy lifestyle where I was working really hard and playing really hard. And one day that caught up with me. So I've still to this day, I don't know exactly what I had, but I think it could be described as a chronic fatigue. And I had, you know, a page of symptoms, you know, just tons of issues. You know, I was chronically tired, chronic fatigue. I was falling asleep on my desk as I was reading documents. Mm-hmm. You know, there were issues with my joints. I could just go on and on. I was getting colds all the time. My immune system was horrible. It seemed like I could, you know, catch anything that was kind of going around. And I was really frustrated. So I went to some doctors, and no one could really help me. One doctor said, oh, you're absolutely allergic to something. So I went to an allergist, and he said, he did all the tests and came back and said, you're the most non-allergic person I've ever met. So I just became really frustrated, and I realized that the traditional kind of allopathic way was not going to help me out. So I met someone who sort of led me back to the path of health, and he was a traditional Chinese medicine doctor. So I started a totally different diet. I did acupuncture, I did Qigong, and I, you know, it was a slow process because it doesn't happen overnight. If it takes, you know, 10, 15 years to develop a condition like this, it's going to take some time to get back. Especially if you're using natural methods. So it took me a while, but I did get back to health. And so now I'm sort of obsessed by it. And mm-hmm. I really want to help people so that they can avoid, you know, the pitfalls of leading a life that is not healthy and does not contribute to your well-being.
And isn't it interesting that you went to all these doctors and nobody could tell you anything? So imagine all those people out there that are in your situation mm-hmm. that really are trying to find answers, and yet they're stuck with nowhere to turn because nobody can help them. They haven't learned, they haven't found somebody yet that could tell them how important the quality of their food is. And that's why I think this is so great, because people can go online and start to say, oh yeah, you know what? These are the things that are going on for me, and this makes a lot of sense. Why hasn't anybody told me this before?
Mm-hmm. Here's a question for both of you. What kind of things right now might listeners be tolerating in their bodies or in their health that tuning into your site or just into these topics can be impactful for them? I'm thinking of like digestive issues. I mean, what kind of things are people tolerating in their health that they're just, you know?
Yeah, health is one area. I mean, sourcing is another, like where to get the foods that you need locally, you know, where in your area. But digestive issues, my gosh, maybe overweight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not focusing on weight issues, but I think by eating traditional foods, there is a high likelihood of losing the weight
mm-hmm.
That is unnecessary and not helping you in your body.
Do you have any insight on that, Julie?
Yeah, actually, I would love to talk about that, because for an example of this, what we're calling traditional foods, they in the old days were a lot less worried about fat, and they were a lot more heavily reliant on animal fats instead of these processed fancy trans fats we have today. And there are a lot of people myself included, that have put a lot more fat into their diet and lost a lot of weight. So to give you an example, again, as Carla said, everybody's very different. But to give you an example, my diet has well over 40% fat, and I'm thinner than I probably ever have been, and weight hasn't always been an easy thing for me. So just, you know, so that's just one example. And there's other people that their diet's even higher fat than that. And we've always been taught fat is bad, saturated fat is bad, animal fats are bad. And I can tell you from personal experience that that has not been true for me. However, it's all about the quality. So I would say, yeah, if I were eating French fries, normal, regular, you know, Oscar Mayer bacon, cheese, whatever, nachos, yeah, that would be a problem. But we're talking about the quality of fat and getting good quality. So I think that what happens is that people, when they're eating all these empty foods, their body's starving. So they cannot satisfy. They're trying to get those essential fats, and they can't satisfy it. So they get these cravings, and then they become overweight trying to satisfy that. It's amazing that when you get some of these really nutritive foods and fats in your diet, how that actually can be beneficial.
Yeah, another kind of similar topic would be enzymes and good bacteria,
because
those things are really missing from processed foods and from conventional foods. And so that's the kind of stuff that you'd get on Local Forage, you know, more information about things like that that aren't so advertised,
right,
or, you know, that aren't publicized, let's say.
Right, because what is publicized are the mass junky products. And we look across America, and people are obsessed with low-fat this, no-carb that. And it's like, why do we take in that as being substantive when we look around at the results that collective America is seeing right now in the rates of diabetes and obesity and cancer and Alzheimer's at young age, autism in kids, ADD across the board, all these problems as a result of this collective standard American diet. And we have to, we clearly cannot look to that place for the answers as to what to do to elicit health.
I think that what Carla said at the beginning about the taste of the food, I think this is where we're going to win all of our converts, because we'll take somebody like my mother-in-law, someone we know very dearly and intimately, and she likes junk. She loves junk. She loves sugar. But I'm telling you, when she drinks raw milk and she comes over to our house, she loves it. So, I mean, I think anybody that tries these foods can tell the difference in quality. And what Martin was noticing the other day and was kind of ranting about is, we go over to her house and we look at the cream in her refrigerator, and quote, whipping cream has not only cream, but carrageenan and color and preservative and all of these added things to it. And that's not whip. I mean, you think you're going to buy whipping cream, it's going to be cream. You know, so I think people aren't totally aware of what's in their food and the importance of quality.
Yeah, and taste really will attract them to those foods. But they don't even know that they taste great. So
exactly.
That's, you know, that word needs to get out.
Right.
You just did 89.5 KPOO. This is Reality Sandwich. And today we're on, here in the studio is Carla Borelli. She's the founder of the new website and blog, localforage.com. Check it out to help yourself become more healthy. So we're talking about food issues. We were speaking of traditional foods and all the different types of things on the site. And
let's talk about taste, because I want to talk about the fatted calf, because the fatted calf is my favorite.
Okay.
Yeah, the fatted calf. A very dangerous place to shop.
Yes. So if you haven't ever heard of it or been there, definitely go to the blog and check out the article on it. But let's talk about one of my favorite stalls at the farmer's market. At the Ferry Building, downtown San Francisco, Saturday mornings is a little stand on the south end, the south side when you first walk in, and there it's called the Fatted Calf. And why don't you describe a little bit about them?
Oh, just a house of goodness. They have some amazing, amazing meat products. And first of all, they use super high quality animals, meats. They use heirloom pork. They use pastured animals. And so the taste of these products is just phenomenal. Like, their bacon is absolutely to die for.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this other item called crepinettes.
Mm.
And these are like little sausage patties. And I think they vary. I'm not sure if they're the same. The one that I had was a pork sausage with pieces of liver in the middle.
Duck liver.
Duck liver, yes. It was duck. And my God, the taste of this thing, it was just absolutely to die for. Like, I'm dreaming about this crepinette.
Caramelized
now.
Onions and pistachio nuts, all of these.
I'm sure our carnivore listeners are just watering at the mouth.
I never thought I liked liver. And so the nice thing is, these are the most tasty little sausage patties that I've ever had. They're so delicious.
Well, and the other thing is that, the liver is amazingly tasty.
And it's not animal tortured duck liver. You know, they're not force fed. These are healthy.
Yeah, they're very humanely raised. And not only that, but, you know, when you're eating an animal's detoxification organ,
mm-hmm.
you want to be really sure that it's coming from a good place.
Yes.
So the fatted calf is, and I actually think this is the title of the article on my blog, it's like, it's pate you can trust. So yeah, I love that place.
So if you're trying to get yourself or your kids to have more liver because you've heard good things about it and you want to make sure that you're getting a high quality source that's very delicious, they have quite a few liver products. So they, like Carla said, they have a pate that's chunky, and they have a pate that's smooth. They have these crepinettes that we mentioned. And then they have just all sorts of other just old-fashioned mm-hmm. artisan, old-world-made yes. salamis. And, I mean, these are the way that they were made in the old days.
Yeah.
And their bacon is the highest quality organic pork, hand-smoked, no nitrates or nitrates or artificial anything.
Yeah, and they're also at the Berkeley Farmers Market. I don't think they have a physical location, though.
I don't. I think you're correct. Really? The only place I know how to reach them is at the Farmers Market.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, again, it's like, this is not easy stuff to find. You got to dig a little bit, and that's where they are, though, at the Farmers Market.
You do have to dig to be healthy nowadays, because if we just take what's given to us, doesn't necessarily sustain us very well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all these cardboard-contained items and ingredients and all kinds of junk like that. So,
And these smaller companies just don't have budgets for advertising.
Yeah.
So
right.
It really is kind of word of mouth and grassroots, kind of viral, you know, people just talking about it, telling their friends about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a space on your site called Coffee Talk.
Coffee talk,
where people can connect with one another, and so tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's just kind of a chat room or open. It's an open thread, basically, and you know, the way a blog works is that the author, myself, would post an article, and then there's a link at the bottom that says comments, and so you'd click on comments and write whatever you want in response to the article. Coffee Talk is an area of the blog that will allow you to not necessarily respond to any particular post, but just, you know, express an opinion or rant, rave, you know, just bring up a topic that you would like to talk about. So as my blog gets more and more exposure, I'm really looking forward to some kind of open-ended discussions in there. And anyone who's listening today, feel free to go there and start up a conversation.
Yes, and that's localforage.com.
Excellent. So, and there's all kinds of books and resources there for the emerging health conscious?
Yeah. In fact, gosh, if people are interested in finding out more about these topics, there are several books that I could recommend. I'll talk about two that are from local writers. The first one is a book called Diet for a Dead Planet, Big Business and the Coming Food Crisis. And this book is by Christopher Cook, a local guy. And he has a really cogent synthesis of arguments against industrial farming and the monopolies that are created by agribusiness. So he talks about that in depth, and he explains why our entire food system is in crisis.
Mm.
And a lot of people don't realize that our food system is in Crisis. So that's a really interesting book. There's another person by the name of Michelle Simon, and she is an attorney, and she wrote a book called Appetite for Profit, How the Food Industry Undermines Our Health and How to Fight Back. And she brilliantly exposes the tactics that these food companies use to sort of, well, not quite tell the truth, mm-hmm. how they try to get people to buy their stuff.
In fact, I'm sorry, I heard Michelle speak one time, and I'm on her newsletter, and you can, I'm sure, get on her newsletter, and they're fascinating. That I think I sent you the that link to McDonald's advertising in China, that those disgusting ads about.
Yes.
That was from her. She's really into McDonald's and uncovering all of their propaganda, and she's great, Michelle Simon.
Yeah, and she explains why we can't trust these food corporations to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely a book about politics.
Yeah.
Politics.
I'm just remembering now the Cheerios commercial. I don't have TV anymore, but that commercial used to always irk me, is how the entire 30-second spot is about associating Cheerios with lower cholesterol. When you listen to what they say and the little words on the screen, what they're saying is if you are on a cholesterol-lowering diet over a long period of time, and part of that diet happens to be Cheerios... then your cholesterol might become lower.
Right, but because it's the thing about a high fiber diet,
right.
And because Cheerios has fiber,
right.
They're making the link.
And that's right. Like, you know, multiple links you got to put together to then mm-hmm. come out thinking, oh, if I'm eating Cheerios, I'm doing something to lower my cholesterol.
Yeah, there's a lot of rhetoric,
mm-hmm.
Extreme rhetoric,
yeah.
And it's tremendously misguided. Now we would want to get into whether it's intentionally misguiding or not, but they're out to sell products. And they're not out to serve our health.
Yeah. Yeah. So that book really covers that if that's an area of interest for you. There's another couple books that cover more the topic of what to eat and why you should eat it. There are two authors. One is Nina Plank. Her book is called Real Food, What to Eat and Why. And Marion Nestle, who is a professor of nutrition food studies and public health at New York University. Really great book called What to Eat, An Aisle-by-Aisle Guide to Savvy Food Choices and Good Eating.
Mm-hmm.
So these are two great choices to discover more about specific foods. Then there's kind of the mother of all books that has been a huge inspiration to me, which is The Omnivore's Dilemma by Michael Pollan.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just such a fabulous writer. It's just that book is just a joy to read.
Mm.
He's a longtime contributing writer to the New York Times magazine, and like I said, he's just really a fun read, and you will be shocked by a lot of the stuff in the book. And then on the cookbook side, there are two that I'd like to mention, which is, first of all, my sort of Bible, Sally Fallon's Nourishing Traditions. It's the cookbook that challenges politically correct nutrition and the diet dictocrats. That's the subtitle to the book. And that book just is a wealth of information. It has fantastic recipes. It has background on why you should choose certain foods over others. And for those of you that don't know, Sally Fallon is the president of the Weston A. Price Foundation. And let's see. There are links, I think, to the Weston A. Price Foundation on my site, and also links to all of these books in case you're not writing down these titles.
And listeners can catch a couple of interviews with Sally Fallon here on Reality Sandwich at realitysandwichradio.com.
Right.
All the past interviews are archived there.
And there's a raw milk interview as well on the website, so people can find out some other past information by going to that Reality Sandwich Radio.
Oh, did she the raw milk interview or someone else?
Mark McAfee.
Oh, you had him on the show.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Yeah.
So what else can people find out about? I know that there's a lot on, you know, how-tos of preparing things and, you know.
Yeah. There's a lot of different things that they, you know, I wanted the site to be a place where you can do things. You know, it's not just information. You could find out where to actually get things and how to do things. So, yeah, there are recipes. There are also things like reviews of restaurants. And so I really focus on restaurants that are using organic, sustainably raised foods.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a real focus. There are some articles on food politics, as I mentioned with the raw milk article and to some degree the fish article. And then what else? Recipes, food politics, sourcing. Yeah, sourcing I think is big, and that's really where I'm counting on my readers to help out because, you know, it's hard to, like I said, the advertising budgets for these small companies are minuscule to non-existent. And so it really, you have to rely on other people telling you where to get this great stuff. So what I really want to do is encourage this kind of conversation and exchange. You know, where do you get great pastured eggs?
Yes.
You know, and for example, I'm not in Cupertino, but, or Campbell, but, you know, I'd love for people in the South Bay to chime in and say, this is where I get these in the South Bay. So it's a place for people to find things that are normally pretty hard to find.
Yeah, I think it's this is really exciting because we're beginning to wire the new way. And let me just explain that, in that the old way, is the current way, is just whatever we're seeing in the store, whatever we're being sold through the mass media. Yet inside of us, we're desiring greater quality, more healthy stuff, and we've got to create our own new systems of sharing information between us. Because like you say, somebody knows, you know, how to get something or how to do something, or, and we learn from each other. And learning from each other, we can do much more facilitated today through the internet.
Yeah, it's really about building community.
Exactly.
You know, and creating a community of people who care about the same things.
People with integrity, real people that have, you know, touched something that you want to go and touch in some way. And not that you're just blankly reading about. Julia?
Well, I was just going to say, that's what I like about this blog, is that I think many of us, including myself, often get stuck in the trap of being angry with big business and feeling like they're spreading all these inaccurate messages and fighting and being angry and they're doing all this stuff and it doesn't really get us anywhere. So instead, if we just take ourselves out of that and just say, okay, well, this is what we believe in. This is what we want to promote. So let's just talk about how we can do that. And anybody that wants to join in can join in and we'll all do that together. And so it's not only it's a more positive message, but it's a message of how to do these things that you want in life and we can.
Yeah, and I think that's how movements grow, you know, and you're right. I think we don't really gain anything by, you know, fear-mongering. You know, you've got it. We've got to know the facts. Okay, that's
right.
Important. But beyond that, it's really important to stay positive and just to take action, to do the right thing and to do things that are good for your family and your health. And to build community around it. If, you know, you're not getting support from larger organizations, you know, this is grassroots. Do it on your own. You know, find out on your own and build systems around you so that you can get what you need.
Yes.
We have about 10 minutes left. I want to ask you guys this. It's been on my mind. You know, there's a lot of people that are not as healthy as they'd like to be. You know, and in their minds, they're kind of wondering, you know, gee, how do I deal with this? And I've heard so many stories of people shifting components of their diet, not necessarily radical changes, right? Because so many people have aversions to, I got to change everything, and they end up changing anything because it's so difficult. But just beginning to implement some shifts, and this topic of traditional foods and fermented foods has been coming into my mind from multiple angles recently. People that are listening, if they begin to open up to those concepts, learn some things on your sites, and begin to incorporate, how can they begin and how might that begin to impact their health? Generally speaking, health.
Go ahead, Julie.
I was just going to say, well, maybe we should just take a step back and pull out that fermented foods thing that you just mentioned, because I think that an area of traditional cultures and diets that for generations we depended on for survival were being able to ferment foods and vegetables through the winter, and our systems have developed, and our immune system and our digestive function all require all this good bacteria. Yet in our culture, we are so afraid of any bacteria, just the word bacteria. I saw this thing for children. It was a book they were using in school, and it was like a little pamphlet on health, and it said the only good bacteria is dead bacteria.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And so people have this fear. We need antibacterial things. We need antibiotic things. We need to kill it. But people just not getting that good bacteria is essential to our life.
Well, you know what? When I first made sauerkraut, I have to say I was kind of in that category. I was a little freaked out about leaving the stuff on the counter.
Me too.
So it's really a matter of education and experience. Mm-hmm. And hearing from other people who've left milk out on a counter for 2 days and they didn't die.
Right.
You know, in fact, they created this fabulous kefir or yogurt.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there are some sort of mental blocks, but they're unfounded. I mean, mm-hmm. I've, you know... The kraut that I make is the most delicious, crispy, you know, goodness-filled stuff that you can buy. And, you know, in fact, my doctor recommended that I take a couple tablespoons of it before every meal. Mm. I mean, that's how good it is. That, mm-hmm. you know, kind of these enlightened medical practitioners are actually recommending these things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to... you know, learn about this stuff and to sort of throw away some of these old perceptions that you have about what is bad and what is good.
Right. I was just at this autism conference and they were talking about probiotics or good bacteria you can find in a capsule. And they were saying, you know, we need 100 billion or a couple hundred billion a day, which is way more than most people can get in capsule form. And then it just dawned on me, fresh, homemade, raw, it doesn't even have to be raw, but fresh, homemade, 24-hour cultured yogurt has hundreds of billions of good bacteria. So if we were to eat these mm-hmm. types of foods, they're really health-promoting. And I think the positive thing is that now we have MDs and doctors and researchers and mm-hmm. people talking about how these good bacteria, whether it's from a capsule or from a food, are really, really nourishing. So it's nice to hear there's a lot of professionals coming around and understanding the bigger picture.
Yeah, and they do exist. You know, I mean, they're definitely in smaller numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Weston A. Price organization in San Francisco has a good listing for holistic practitioners in the area.
Yes, and that's Weston at W-E-S-T-O-N, Weston A. Price, San Francisco, all spelled out, .org.
Right.
So there's a whole culture of people out there growing locally, in our local communities and across the country, who are embracing traditional foods, traditional diets.
Mm. Oh, gosh, it's growing
exponentially.
Essentially
moving the clock, cultural clock, back 80 years or so, and back and looking at, from a very sharp, you know, discerning eye today, what were people eating that were nourishing their bodies for generations and generations versus a lot of the stuff that we've been, you know, mass producing and commercially for over the last 50, 60, 70 years that have been resulting in all kinds of physical maladies in our society.
I think that on some level, people are beginning to realize that. And they certainly, when they taste some of these really good foods, they're certainly saying, wow, I didn't realize there was such a difference because I'd been eating the other one for so long.
Right. And as you were saying, Carla, earlier, there needs to be a balance. Not everyone can go out tomorrow and afford to buy all raw milk or to, you know, to buy all their $6 a dozen eggs. But there are places to begin because here we're talking about making your own sauerkraut. Really, anybody can do that, right? I mean,
yeah, and it's really
it's cheap,
inexpensive.
It's easy. It just requires a little bit of time. And, you know, that is sort of a component of these traditional foods. You do, and, you know, I think that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think knowing where your food comes from and actually working with the food and seeing it is really important. It brings you closer. It gives you a more intimate relationship with food that mm-hmm. you're putting in your body that's becoming you.
And it's mm-hmm. an amazing learning experience for kids, too. I mean, my favorite thing to do in school was to do little science projects or little cooking things and to take cabbage, shred it up, put it in a container, leave it out on the counter for weeks, and then eat it, and it's a totally different thing. That's really fascinating.
Yeah, and with no vinegar.
Right.
It totally undergoes this transformation. Mm-hmm. It's like a miracle of nature, really.
It's fascinating, and kids love this kind of thing, and then you get them involved, and they understand, and they're more likely to eat it, some of these foods, so...
Yeah, and you can give a little history, like, you know, in the old days when they were transporting things across oceans, they couldn't, you know, they didn't have any refrigeration.
Mm-hmm.
So how did they eat? How did they live for a week on a boat? Well, they took things like sauerkraut, which had a lot of vitamin C and actually prevented scurvy. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you can kind of weave in all these cool stories.
And interconnected with that is this notion of pickling, right?
Pickling
fruits and cucumbers and all kinds of things that we could prepare and eat over.
Which we used to do, in the old days.
Yeah, over the long winter.
And now, definitely. And what you get now in the store that is, quote, sauerkraut or pickled is a totally different thing than the traditional way of making it.
Yeah, they're basically killing all the good stuff. And why do they kill the good stuff? For shelf life.
Right, right. And for also fear of bad stuff, I suppose. There's a component of that as well.
Yeah,
right.
So the only real way to get this stuff, I mean, it's inaccessible unless, in a lot of cases, you make it yourself. You know, I did see a guy at the farmer's market who is selling naturally fermented pickles, and I think he had sauerkraut, too.
Okay.
But, you know, again, it's hard to find.
Right.
So Reality Sandwich listeners can go to your site at localforage.com and begin to share some of their own insights, learn more about these health topics, about where to get some healthy foods locally, and they can get some recipes to even help themselves begin to make their own sauerkraut or just, you know, start your own journey towards...
Or places to buy it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I encourage people to submit the recipes and to tell us other venues where we can buy the good stuff. Because it takes a village. It takes a community. So we really want to encourage people to come onto the site, make comments, give advice, give tips.
Mm-hmm.
Carla Borelli, localforage.com. Thanks so much for being on the show today and sharing with us these incredible insights. I'm just sure that listeners, you know, as we build a community here in San Francisco and spread that vision across the globe, of people beginning to step more into their own power and their own discernment about the quality of their personal health and the health of all things around them. I mean, that's what healthful living is about. That's why Julie and I have created the Healthful Living Model. And that's why we do Reality Sandwich, to share with you each week insights on topics that will help to empower your own personal choices for health in all areas of life. All areas of life. Next week on the show, we have Dr. Mitra Ray. She wants each of us to live the longest, healthiest life possible. And she believes that in order to do that, we have to be willing to take full responsibility for our health and begin to apply some of the fundamental principles of biochemistry and physiology to our daily lives. Just what we're talking about today. Be smart, learn, begin to apply it to your life. In a couple of weeks, we have Mario West. She is a no-nonsense spiritual teacher. Great show, and I think there'll be incredible insights for all of us, regardless of your own particular spiritual connection. And then I'm very excited, in 3 weeks, we'll be speaking about more subjects near and dear to our heart when Harrison Shepherd returns to the show, and he has a new book out called Too Much for Our Own Good, all about consumeritis and how much our society has become so dependent on consumption, 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 and how it's impacting us. And so importantly, how do we become aware of it and break through it?
Mm-hmm.
How do we create some change in our own lives and for others, societally? So
you can find out more about Martin and I and our services at healthfulliving.org. And you can find any of our past shows, including this one, available for free download at realitysandwichradio.com.
We'll be back next week at noon. Thanks for tuning in and see you then. You've been listening to Reality Sandwich on 89.5 KPOO, San Francisco. This show and any past shows of Reality Sandwich are available for free download at realitysandwichradio.com, where you can also read about upcoming shows. To learn more about Julie Matthews or Martin Matthews, go to healthfulliving.org. Thanks for listening.